The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today we have a different kind of episode for you all. We know how important the Black Lives Matter movement is, and we want to do our part. The Army fandom consists of people from all backgrounds, ethnicities, races, and genders. Black Army is just as important as everyone else. We'd like to take this time to help give them a platform, and hopefully this will help people better understand what has been going on.
Today, we have special guests joining us to discuss Black Lives Matter. So please welcome Monique, Desi, and Emily. Woo! Introduce yourselves, please.
Hi, guys. I'm Monique. I'm a listener of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, she's a premium listener, so it's really excited. I believe you are our first premium listener to be part of this podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that. I'm so honored. Yes.
Okay, my name's Desi March. I'm a K-pop YouTuber. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And Desi has, they also have a podcast with Briss. We could shout that out now, and then we'll get more information about it, like, at the end of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I've also got a podcast, Brizzy Talk with Briss.
Yeah. And I'm Emily Heidel. I'm one of the producers for this podcast, as well as for Brizzy Talk. And I also host a podcast with Dre called In My Feels. So I'm very honored to be a part of this.
Oh, thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much for taking the time to join us in this important episode. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to give our listeners a better understanding about Black Lives Matter, the movement, the history of Black people, and why this has become a movement. Mm-hmm. So our first question that we have, and feel free to jump in, how have you been feeling the last couple of weeks? Supported, confused, frustrated, or a combination of all those feelings?
I've been feeling like overwhelmed with like gratefulness at this point, because like I know it's like I kind of think of it as like this, everything happens for a reason. So I think it was kind of written like some kind of like divine intervention that like a pandemic happens, you have to stay inside your house, you're like frustrated about whatever you're frustrated about, and then like on top of that, there's people still getting killed out here for no reason. And like, you can't get away from it at this point because social media is so powerful. So to see everything that I seen on the internet, and then when I went to protest, I was like, yo, I'm about to, my eyes are about to like water up. And I'm like in a happy way. Like, this is the craziest feeling I've ever gotten. And I felt like I think the closest I've got to that is probably like, maybe like going to a wedding or something like that kind of feeling, like just overwhelming, like joy. And like, that's basically how I felt.
Yeah. Like in the beginning, I was feeling really just exhausted because I was just like, here we go again with this. Like, and you like, because of the pandemic, like you have no other choice but to be inundated with it. Just like what Desi was saying, like you're on social media all the time. It's being blasted. Like, you have no choice but to see the video or some parts of it or a still of it. So it was definitely exhausting. But as you know, as the weeks have gone on, and as more people have been like standing up and saying something, it like gratefulness and hopefulness has definitely like risen in me. And I'm like, this is definitely different. This is different from all of the other times. And you can see it, like there's evidence of it, like everywhere. And just the overwhelming support that I've gotten from like my white friends. Like I was joking around with one of my friends today, and I was like, I don't think I've ever had, you know, many white people, you know, hit me up. Like, this is kind of strange.
True.
Wow. This is nice.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Like, at first, Dre and I were talking about it. I was like, at first, it was kind of awkward, because I was like, how do I, like, it was a lot of like, I'm here for you, you know, if you need anything, blah blah blah, like that kind of thing. And I was like, thanks. Like, I don't know, you know, it was like a weird, like, I don't know how to respond to this, but I was all the more, you know, grateful. And I think one of the things that was so interesting with it all, and almost confusing in a way, is like, despite all the media and stuff that's going around, like, you know, seeing people's, you know, overwhelming support on social media. And Desi, you know, we spoke about this a little bit too, I guess through text, but like seeing everyone's overwhelming support and like for the first time ever was kind of just like, where was the support in 2013 and 2014 and 2015? Like when this was happening all the same. And, you know, the fact that there is a huge pandemic where like people can't ignore it. Like they are looking at their phones 24/7 now as a blessing, but also it's just confusing, because it's like, y'all knew it was happening. Like, and it took this much to, you know, get you, you know, everybody else on board. So like, I don't know, it was confusing. And seeing people, and now I remember last week when I was having conversations with some of my, like, my Black friends, I was like, do y'all feel like this is, especially on the Blackout Tuesday thing, like, do y'all feel like this is all for show, all for a trend? And at first they were like, no. And then as it went on, they were like, they started seeing people who they knew for a fact. And we all like know people for a fact that have said and done some racist stuff in front of me, in front of them. And they were posting, I'm here with you, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I was like, bruh, like, this is, it started to get annoying in a way. Sorry, I'm like on a rant right now, but I'm just like, when, and then you can see it now, everybody can see it now, it's starting to fade. People have started to post the normal things, and not that they should continue to, you know, flood everybody's pages, but you can see the people who are still dedicated to educating themselves and continuing to pay attention to the news and the injustices and the, you know, microaggressions, whatever it happens to be, and like recognizing, you know, the privilege that is there or may not be there. But you know, it's just, I think overall it's been a confusing time, but also a grateful time, because, and, you know, it's finally happening. Like there's support from, you know, outside of the Black race, and people are now realizing, like, holy shit, sorry. Holy crap. Like, you know, racism is still alive and deep, and, you know, it's affecting people more than just what you say and how you look at somebody. It's like the systems, which I know you want to talk about, Roseanne. Anyway, sorry for my long rant.
No, you're fine. It's just really amazing to see, like, not only people in the U.S. are protesting, but literally everyone around the world, from UK, Japan, even Korea. Like, I just recently saw news about Korea protesting against it. It's just because I want to address that racism is not only happening in the U.S., but around the world. And everyone knows this. And we're basically fighting for basic human rights, you know, like just equality.
Equality, yeah.
And so, like, this is like a, not only is COVID a pandemic, but I feel like racism is a pandemic as well. You know,
definitely.
Like, yeah, 100%.
But, I mean, what is the best way for people to be sensitive to this issue?
I would say you got to throw out those, like, those long-lived, like, phrases that people will say, because, like, some people don't even catch themselves, like, oh, I have a Black friend, or I dated a Black person, or, like, oh, I'm not racist, I have a Black friend, or I'm not, my friend's gay, or this, that's still, like, you're still racist, you're still homophobic, like, that's still, like, and you don't even know it at that point, because you've been conditioned to, like, to deflect it or do whatever you want to do or say whatever you want to say to, like, are you against it? Because I was talking to one of my friends about that He's half black, half Asian. We were protesting the other day and we're talking about the conversation we had with our friends that were non-black that would argue like their use of the N-word. And you'd have to like, it would be so weird because it's like, why are you still throwing, why is there still a but when I just told you? Or it's like, but it's like, there is no but. Like, you shouldn't say this, period. Like, to where it's like, I shouldn't even have to explain it to you because we are friends. Like, like I would respect I would respect that about you if like something that I did bothers you, especially if there's a long history behind the word, because I would literally like educate my friends and stuff like that, and like two or three of them would be like, but and it's like, there ain't no but. Like, you, like, that is racist. So I think people should just educate yourselves, really, because it's like it's so it's way easier nowadays. You could pick up your phone and you could Google like the Black Lives Matter, like when it started and everything. Because I remember when Oscar Grant died in 2009, I lived like an hour away from Oakland, and I remember like my friends from school coming to my house and be like, yo, hop in, we about to go riot. And I'm like, I'm not about to go, like, I'm black too, like y'all like, it was me and like two other black people, baby. And I was like, yo, y'all shouldn't even go to that, like, this might get pretty ugly. And then I remember like a couple years later, Trayvon Martin had passed away or gotten killed by George Zimmerman, and then I think he was acquitted, and then Black Lives Matter started, and that was like the first protest I went to. And I remember going to that and I was like, man, nobody's gonna be here, like, we might end up getting hurt here. And like, I remember then Black Lives Matter was not cool to say. Like, it was not, it was not even like the way it is now, how it's like prominent and it's cool to say. Like, back then it was not, it was like way heavier on the All Lives Matter, or like cut that out kind of thing. Even after, and this is after Oscar Grant dies in 2009, and then the Michael B. Jordan movie about it comes out 4 years later, and then Trayvon Martin dies. And I'm still over here like, why are we protesting? Like, they don't care about us. Like, this is not going to work. But you fast forward to now, I think that's like the kids that probably like my niece, she was about like, I don't know, like in elementary school back then. Now she's getting ready to go to college. And I kept seeing a bunch of kids her age at the protest. So I was like, yo, these kids are like fearless. Like, and they don't, they're going to get it done regardless. Like, they don't care about a tear gas or any, like, they're ready. I remember at the protest I was at, they said, don't be scared, be ready. And I was like, yo, these kids are gonna make me cry. Like, I'm 28 and this girl is like in her early 20s, like talking about what needs to be talked about. And she thought 11 people would show up to that protest. 6,000 people marched with her.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. It was wild. And most of them were white. And I was like, this is the tightest thing. Like, I never thought I'd be so excited to see something. It's like, wow, this is cool. But yeah, I think overall people, you just educate yourselves, check on your black friends, check on your friends, colored or whatever you want to call it these days. I don't know what people are calling it now. Like, just check on them and like, see if they're good. Ask them questions if you're curious about something. Like, don't be afraid to ask questions, especially if you have someone that you know that is black. Like, just ask them a question.
I think on that same note too, we just have to be on both sides, like, really gracious to each other, because this is still a traumatic experience for a lot of black people. And I know for the people in my world, they're rather annoyed at continuing to have to answer to white people or to answer their questions about certain things. And so for some of us, like, you know, my encouragement to those who are black is like, let's continue to be gracious and like, listen, it's going to be the 11th time that this question is going to be asked to you. Just answer it anyway, because we obviously know that the history that is being taught right now is from the lens of a white person's perspective. Yeah. And the only way that they're going to be able to learn and educate themselves is if you, who really truly know, you know, as long as you are doing your research and you know, doing the things that you need to do to stay educated yourself, they're going to have to learn from you. And then, you know, from, you know, for a white person or, you know, if you or not, or just not even white, just like, you know, anybody who's not black, you just have to, you know, just make sure that, you know, you're being sensitive to your black friends and, you know, making sure that, like, it's okay to ask these questions. Cause some people it's really annoying. It's really tiresome. And they're you just have to give them a minute to be able to kind of process everything. But when you do, just be sensitive and be willing to listen to what they're having to say, not listen to have a rebuttal, but listen to understand them and say, yes. All right, you know what? I think you're right. I'm getting it. I'm slowly trying to understand. And then giving yourself grace to be able to walk through this too. Cause I feel like now that everyone is having kind of like this aha moment, they're like, you know, some people are looking for people to just get it automatically, and that's not always going to happen. And then for those who feel that pressure, they're trying to want to understand quickly, and it's not like you just take your time, like give yourself grace to be able to navigate this in a way that you're going to come out better in this. So that, like, definitely grace everywhere.
Yeah.
Y'all touched on everything. Yeah. I guess more when they're asking these questions, or if you do have questions, like also listen, I guess, to the people who are explaining it to you, and listen. And that means by, you know, obviously having conversations like this, but also, educating yourself. And I know I'm not even the most educated on all the stats and everything like that. So I certainly have much to do. But I think listening, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of conversations that are happening on other podcasts and other, you know, just seminars and just things that you can look at, you know, on YouTube or whatever, and just listening from the Black voices themselves, you know, mm-hmm. how they feel, rather than, you know, just reading what you might see in articles and things like that. I think that's, you know, listening in a purposeful way if you're trying to learn, you know, about the movement.
For sure.
So our next question is, like, have you personally or anyone you know experienced police brutality before, or any type of racism?
Oh yeah, my mom did growing up, like a lot. Like I remember asking my mom specifically, because she had like a couple of her teeth are chipped growing up, and I was like, how did your teeth get like that? And she was like, Big Red did it. I was like, who is Big Red? And she's like, as a neighborhood cop, like a cop bully that was super racist, and he would always pull us over for nothing. And one day he had pulled me over and slammed me against his car, and that's how my teeth got knocked out or got chipped. And I was like, dang. And the way she made it sound, and like when she would tell stories about it, it was like a recurring thing that she had just gotten used to. Like everybody in the neighborhood was used to this racist cop named Big Red just coming through and bullying them, or like planting stuff on them, or whatever the case may be. And I was like, that's insane. That, like, that's what always throws me off too, is like just like basic stuff. Like, it's like people like the whole, we were talking about after the protest too, like I brought it up to everyone that I was with. I was like, isn't it crazy how we're still protesting for like basic stuff that we were supposed to be promised living in America? Like back then, like my great grandpa was like, yo, we just want to drink at the water fountain. Like, we just want to go to the diner and like have a milkshake. Like it's very, like, we just want to stand at the concert without a barrier in between us. Like, we just want to dance and like live life. Like, we just want to go to school. But people used to, like, even back then, like, people would riot because Black people wanted to go to school somewhere. Yeah. Like, it was the craziest thing to me. But yeah, my mom had told me that story about that cop, and I was like, that's insane, way back then.
I fortunately have never, you know, known any, to my knowledge, and I'm thinking about it, like, known anyone that has experienced police brutality. My one thing that's that I guess it's to prevent it, I guess, is my brother, he's younger than me, but he's you know, and that's one thing I realized with being Black as well. I don't look Black. And so there are, unfortunately, like, things that my brother, who is darker than me, has to go through through what my parents teach him, that I've never been told or to do or not to do. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is when he turned 16 or 17 and he got a license and he got a car, my dad got him a sticker. And if you don't know, but like, or if you're not aware, I didn't know this before he got it, but the like solidarity sort of sticker, like, or flag that shows that you support, police is like it's like a black and blue, like striped, almost looking like flag sort of thing. And yeah, so my dad got my brother that, and he put it on the back of his car, Not because like my family's never been the biggest fan of police in general or the armed forces, just because of everything that they've done to, you know, a lot of people and the Black mm-hmm. community. But he put it on the back of my brother's car as a preventative measure. So if he ever does get stopped, he, you know, and they happen to look down, you know, they'll be like, oh, he's a good one. We're not going to do anything ridiculous to him.
Wow.
And there have been times when there was one time we were driving back from like my aunt's house, and like I was going a little fast, and he like pretty much yelled at me because my brother was in his own car driving behind us, and he was like, you need to slow down. What if he gets stopped and something happens to him? Like you just have to be. And so thinking about it in that way, like, makes me so angry, but like, I don't know. Sometimes people, I don't know, that's my family's done like preventative measures so that it doesn't happen to, you know, people like my brother.
Yeah. I didn't have anything, thankfully, anything too crazy like happened to me or anyone that I know. Mm-hmm. I remember this one time though, I was seeing this guy who happened to be white, and we just came from a jazz club. We were like, you know, having a good time. And we had just ended up going to a local park in my area, and we were just kind of in the car just talking, and all of a sudden, like, we just see these blaring lights, and we're like, what the heck? So the cop had came. So like, if we were parking as if we were parking inside of like, you know, the park space, he had like kind of came like his lights were pointed towards the driver section. And so he gets out of the car, like, he asked us, like, what are you doing? And we were like, we're just, you know, sitting here talking. Mm-hmm. And so he tells me, he's like, ma'am, can you step out of the car? And so at this point, I'm like, what is happening? And I get out of the car. And so he asked me for my ID. And so I give him my ID. And then he's like, do you know the guy in the car? And I was like, yeah, I know him. He's my friend. Like, I don't. And he just kept asking me, like, what is his name? What does he do? Do you know him? And then it dawned on me. I was like, you think I'm a prostitute? And I was I was like, wait, hold on. And so like literally everything kind of just stopped. And I was like, wait, hold on a second. You think I'm a prostitute? And he just kept asking me questions for like 10 minutes. He just kept asking me, oh, what are you doing? Why did you guys come here? And like, just kept asking. And I'm just like, I know him. So he finally lets me go. He gives me back my ID. And then he's like, you know, the park is closed and you guys shouldn't be here, but you know, I'm nice, so I'm gonna give you a warning. And then he lets us go. And I just remember feeling so infuriated, because anyone who knows me knows that I'm not like that. Like, I serve in church. Like, I'm just not that person. But the fact that he didn't even give me the opportunity, like, you had already came in with your preconceived notions because he was a white guy and I was a Black woman. Mm-hmm. Like that, mm-hmm. like I'll never forget that moment. Like, it was mm-hmm. just, it was so infuriating.
After all this, how do you expect change after this? I mean, since this is the first time we have seen such a widespread support from outside of the Black community, literally this is a global protest, a global fight. Or what do you hope would change after this?
I hope that things like that, it doesn't stop. Like, I hope people, like, what I've been seeing lately is people will protest, they'll get what they needed to get done, but they'll quickly move on to the next thing. And I hope that keeps happening, because there's like a ton of, there's like countless senseless killings and stuff like that, but there's still a ton of other things that still need mm-hmm. to get done even after this. There's racism, but after we take care of racism, like, there's homophobia is crazy in America and all over the world too. Like, they've spreaded that just as quick as racism, police mm-hmm. brutality, like, so many things, like, just like things getting taken care of in like inner cities and stuff like that. Like, I seen they posted that LA is going to give like, I think 100 or 250 million to like the inner cities or whatever. But a lot of people weren't happy, because that's only like 3% of everything they have. So they were like, and on top of that, like, things cost like a lot of money, like, out here. Like, it's going to take like, what does it take to build a school? Like 9 million, 10 million in programmings and stuff like that, just for like one school. And then on top of that, like there's homeless issues. Like there's like so many other things that we have to keep protesting for that I hope just doesn't stop. Cause I've never seen anything like this since I was like a kid. I remember my mom having me read these, like she has like 20 black encyclopedias in the house that her and my dad and my uncle used to like make sure that we read. And I remember reading about the, there's like a year of like protests around the world, like way, way back. And then it was the same year, I think, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and they had like 6 days of protesting and riots. And then the Civil Rights Act finally passed. And this is, that was 110 cities in America. We have like every city in America, or every state in America. And then we have a bunch of different countries. And then we got the damn Amish and like witches. And that anonymous dude came back after 3 years. So I was like, this is like the power of social media alone with this generation, the Amish, anonymous, and a bunch of different countries that never have like spoken about this. Like, I think we're going to get it done, because everything, like, and I'm excited for a lot of it. Even like at the protest I was at, we have Pride Parade coming up next week in LA, and they're combining it with the Black Lives Matter like protest and parade. So I was like, if stuff like this keeps happening, and we have all these other allies and stuff like that, and people aren't letting up so easily, then I think, I hope that that just continues and it doesn't like get forgotten about like any other time. Cause I remember seeing a bunch of killings and stuff like that, and people are like, oh yeah, this is hashtag for a week, and then it gets forgotten about. Sure. But with these protests, they've already like reopened like Sandra Bland's case, like Philando Castile. Like, I hope stuff like that keeps happening. Like, I hope we keep like going back and bringing stuff up, and then bringing up current issues and like still protesting for that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think they even reopened Breonna Taylor's case as well.
Oh yeah. That was like the highlight of my week, because that was the protest I went to. Like, that was what that was for, and I was like, yes. We're making a lot of progress.
But I'm so glad you brought up how like equality in all areas, even with the homophobia and the transphobia as well. I am so happy a lot of people were also saying that when we're talking about Black Lives Matter, we're meaning all Black Lives Matter, like trans Black people are being killed as well. So let's not forget about them, about it. So I'm so happy you brought that up as well.
Yeah, I think definitely like everything that Desi was saying. And then also, I hope that it enlightens people to like what can happen when we are all together in this. And it's not just going to be a Black issue, or it's not just going to be a gay issue or a whatever issue. It's our issues collectively. And I hope that people are open and to see what it is. And and for people to continue to like educate themselves on what, you know, just educate yourself in general on just other cultures and things like that, and the struggles that other people have to go through. Like, I feel like it's so easy for us to just be in our own little bubbles, our own little spheres, and rightfully so. Like, we have our families, we have our jobs, we have all of these things, and you know, it's so easy to forget everybody else or that's not in your like view. And this situation opened people's eyes to be able to see like, oh, like, you know, there's other people in this world too that need my help. And whatever you can do, if protesting is your thing, if writing letters, if you feel called to go into Congress, like I had a friend of mine who, he was saying that, like, you know, like he felt really called to like, you know, kind of turn a leaf into politics. So this has been awakening a lot of people to different things that they may have not necessarily thought about before. And so continue to pursue those things even after, and don't stop. Don't stop reaching out to your Black friends. Don't stop reaching out to your people. Don't let this just be something that we did because everybody was doing it. Do it because you caught what it was that was happening, and you're ready to continue to bring this into the next season, because we need it.
I was just gonna say, wherever you are, vote. Because it obviously changes things, or you know, in some cases, maybe not because of corruption and things like that. But for the most part, it's hopefully, you know, there to change things. And mm-hmm. I think that it's, you know, not enough to just know who you're voting for your president. You know, they obviously make the federal laws, but there are people that are in your district, your city, your state, that are making the laws that will affect you and those around you every day more than what those federal laws might broadly. Oh. So I think that mm-hmm. reading up and educating yourself on who you think would be best for the office, you know, for you and those around you that you would hopefully care about, I think is very, very important just to continue to vote. Like I did today, and half the people in there, I was like, oh God, I don't know half these people on here. I don't know who am I voting for? And I felt pretty stupid. And so I'm saying for my future self, and you know, when November comes along, at least for people in the US and just for people in general, like, try not to feel stupid at the polls. Try to know who you're voting for and why, so that you can say you did it, you know, educatedly, and you really did, you know, think about how to create change in our system.
Definitely vote, vote, vote.
I know Desi brought up the whole, just in 2 weeks, actually, I'm surprised, or not surprised, I'm thankful that a lot of movement has been going on. And you brought up, like, you know, LA defunding their police. And I know a lot mm-hmm. of people don't really understand what, like, defunding the police means. You know what I mean? Like, because I think back in 2017, it already had noted that the state and local government spent, like, $115 billion back in 2017 just on policing. And so when defunding it means that, like, we're just going to shrink the scope of the police's, like, responsibilities and shifting it to, you know, what the government does to help, basically, like, to invest more in mental health care, housing, and expanding on the community and just violence interruption programs. But I wanted to address this again, like, later on as to why this is, like, really important. Mm-hmm. I think when I was scrolling through Twitter, actually, someone brought up that in Camden, New Jersey, ever since they disbanded mm-hmm. their police department back in 2013, their homicides dropped by 50%.
Oh.
Yep.
Yes. And so, like, and they say now the police department's now smaller, paid less, and then handcuffs or any weapons are, like, the last resort. And I recently also watched, like, an interview in Korea where they said if a video of that, like, similar to George Floyd, were to happen in Korea, everyone would explode because that's not something that police should be doing. Right. And so I think people are trying to make it to, like, ban chokeholds or curb the use of, like, no-knock warrants, train officers to respond to people's, like, mental health crisis, mm-hmm. and just basically teach them to be guardians and, like, not warriors. They're there to protect a community. And I see why people are trying to defund the police, but I know they're, you know, like you guys mentioned, just do more research on it, see why. And but basically police brutality is just one of the factors, though, and I wanted to touch base on more other things as we, like, go on, but that's just one factor that I hope we'll be able to improve, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of tying it into what Emily said about voting and how it's important, because whether you're what state you're in, city, you know, the district, seeing that, taking that in consideration, have you personally had times where you saw or felt where the system that's in place was specifically set up so that you don't get ahead in life?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it just in, like the YouTube social experiment things that I would watch. I remember watching one where a guy changed his name. Like, he had, like, I guess an African-American name, and he changed his name on his job application, and he ended up getting a call back for an interview, and then he tried it again with one of his Hispanic friends, and they changed their name on a job application, and they got a job interview. And I was like, this is the craziest, because that never happened to me. I'd only seen it on mm-hmm. like YouTube, and my name isn't spelled, like, with an S. Like, my name has two Z's in it because my uncle went to a historic Black college, and that's just the wave he was on. He was like, I'm gonna name your son, and he's gonna have two Z's in his name because this, that, and the third. And it never, like, stopped me from getting a job or anything. But when I seen that video, I was like, whoa, like this is like real life. Like people literally will judge you based off of a name, or they can tell that you're who you are based off of a name and they won't hire you because of that. But usually I just see like I know you have to work like twice as hard when you aren't white. Like you're probably gonna have to work 2 to 10 times as hard, especially if you're a woman and you aren't white. Like it's gonna be even harder for you, because that's another thing that always bothered me too when I found out when I was like in my early 20s. I was like, damn, you mean to tell me she could be a doctor and go to the same school I went to and graduate from the same program and still get paid less than I do? That's the craziest thing that I ever heard in my life. I was like, I still remember the day I found that out. I like got so mad at like everybody, people who didn't even do anything to me that day. I was just mad the whole entire day. Like that, it still bothers, just bring it up right now bothers me. Like that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thankful that I live in a rather wealthy area. I live in Northern Jersey. So, the town that I'm in, we like, you know, it's a very well-known town, a lot of celebrities, a lot of the things. So I'm grateful that, because of that, like my schooling and all of that, I hadn't necessarily experienced the system, like specifically affecting me. But mm-hmm. the surrounding towns, that, you know, that I'm near, those are predominantly Black areas, and you can tell the difference just by, you know, the way that the houses look. The school systems are completely different than mine. Like, you know, I remember, you know, like people like giving us like laptops, like, you know, someone's like someone's rich uncle or something like that. He's like, oh, I'm just gonna give this. Like, we had a planetarium in my middle school. Like, what do we need a planetarium for? it was great, but you know, I had access to things that a lot of people didn't have access to, and I'm grateful. But the experience that I had, like even for a town that's like literally 5 minutes away from mine, it was a stark difference. Older books, like it's just the whole shebang. It was just it's really jarring to see. Like, you can tell when you leave from one town to the next town. Like, it's like, wow, mm-hmm. the grass is definitely not green over here. So
mm-hmm. Right.
I saw something this morning, and I felt like maybe this wasn't the direct cause of it, but this goes back to voting, but voter suppression not the most direct way of like, oh, well, sorry, you don't have your cards, you know, or, you know, your license expired, whatever. You don't have the correct documents. It was, it's morning. And a lot of people go to vote in the morning. I live in a predominantly Black community or area, and the south side of Atlanta is majority Black. And like numerous amounts of voting places had lines that were over 3 hours long. And like, my brother went this morning at like 7:00. He didn't finish until like 10:00. And and then when I and you would think, like, you know, people are gonna go early in the day because they have jobs to go to. So like, if you, mm-hmm. you can't stand in a line for 3 hours, you know, when you have to get to work by 9:00, or you have to get to work or on your computer by 8:00, like, you're expecting to get in and out. And my friend who lives in she's Black, but she lives in a, you know, not predominantly Black community. And she was in and out in 15 minutes. And then around the same time. And then later on today, it was like the middle of the day. It was like 4:00. I went and was in and out in like 45 minutes. Same thing with my dad. And it was just interesting seeing how, and then on the news, they were saying how there were a lot of places across South Fulton County, which is majority like southern part of Atlanta, that were 3 hours plus long. And that's been the case, these kinds of really ridiculously long lines in voting, since this Republican dude, Brian Kemp, got elected to be the governor of Georgia in 2013. And he's notorious. He was the one that was like, let's open up, you know, the state, because, you know, let's get back to business, everything's going to be fine. And now you see an uptick in cases of COVID. So it's just crazy to me how, and it, yeah, so that's, I don't know if it's racism, but there's certain things where like the northern side of the city wasn't getting affected like the southern side was, which is majority Black.
No, there's something that I like really wanted to bring up as far as, you know, even I never really knew this until I tried to look more into it, because we're not really taught any of these in school, obviously, like, especially like the whole Martin Luther protest, you know, the whole time I was thinking, oh, it was like peaceful. I didn't know there was, you know, Bloody Sunday. You guys could look into that. But that made me really interested in to try to look up more information. And for those who are listening, there are a lot of, you know, very educated, like a lot of interesting documentaries on Netflix, even YouTube as well. But I wanted to touch base on like the racial wealth gap. And I feel like this plays a huge role as to just how the system is specifically trying to set you guys up to basically not get ahead. Mm-hmm. So they compared both a white household and like a black household's wealth. And they said with white household's wealth, the savings, their assets minus debt, it's $171,000. But then you go to like the median black household wealth, and theirs comes out to 17,000. And people are wondering why is, and this gap is still growing, actually. This huge wealth gap is growing. But I never knew that 2/3 of middle class wealth comes from home ownership and also opportunities to own home. I didn't know back then, though, that the black community were basically being put in certain places on the grid. So if you're trying to buy a house at that time, if you know, you're black, they're going to show you to a black neighborhood. If you're white, you know, of course, welcome to the white neighborhood. But if you try to buy a house in a white neighborhood, they're going to be like, oh, it's sold out, I'm sorry. But then there was this man whose father tested something out and sent over a white couple to purchase a house. And of course, they were like, okay, yeah, that's fine. But then when his black father came in to close the deal on this house, they were furious, because at that time they believed that if a black person were to move into this white neighborhood, it would depreciate in value. And so that time, the white people were, of course, building their fortune, while, you know, it's because the community where you're in really determines how well your education's going to be, you know, how your children's going to grow up. And so I looked more into it and basically found that, I mean, economists are saying that income inequality in the US is actually doing more harm, because when it comes to income inequality, it's associated with like a lot of problems. And they point out studies that show countries with more inequality have more violence, more drug abuse, and incarcerations. And so income inequality also dilutes like political equality as well, because then the rich has like, you know, a say in which policies move forward. And so they just, you know, like that saying, the rich gets richer, the poor gets poorer. And so, and also because of that, there, you know, there are white people that, you know, graduate from college, get a degree, and then there's, you know, someone who's black who also gets, you know, the same degree. So they start off and they get off and they get a job that's equal pay. But then the person who is black, because not everyone in their community is up, you know, like living comfortably, they are more like willing to give their money to help out. While as, you know, the white person, they may be very giving as well, but they don't really have to, because everyone around them is basically, you know, well set. And so it's just it's just crazy, because I do have people who try to like rebuttal against like, oh yeah, you know, I'm not in for all this because they're the ones who are starting all this violence, they're like you know, known druggies and all these violent people. But then it's kind of like, after looking into your guys' histories, it's just insane, because it's kind of like I felt like they were trying to set you guys up to basically fail. And it's really, really heartbreaking. And it makes me frustrated and angry. So.
Yeah, they set it up. I I don't respect it at all, but I'll give it to them for that. They set it up perfectly for us to like not win at all. I remember when I worked for a mortgage group, like right before my best friend passed and everything. And I was looking into stuff like that because I had, it was after I looked into Malcolm X and like Martin Luther King. And I was like, oh dang, he didn't die in front of a hotel. Like y'all suffocated him in a hospital and like spat on him. Like that's insane. You won't make a movie about that though. But I remember looking up like old mortgage laws and stuff like that. And black people couldn't buy a house at one point. It was against the law. And it was like, and then after that passed, I guess like mortgage discrimination happened. And I found out that black people and Latinos pay like way more in interest for houses. Like a black or a Latino homeowner could go get like $500,000 house. But like over the time of that loan, like they'll end up paying anywhere from like $500 to $1,000 more. And it's like, they set it up perfectly. And that's just like nowadays, like if you rewind all the way back, like the minstrel shows were like, it's like the worst thing that I ever seen in my life. I was like, that's the craziest thing I'd ever seen is like a white person just dressed up in like all black, like charcoal smeared all over their skin. And then they're just making all these little jokes. And that's like a worldwide television show that people are seeing. So it's like, they see it in America and then people all over the world see it. So by the time black people do make it to those countries or anything, like that perspective is already like built in generations and generations, decades, hundreds of years. And then like certain things I think about sometimes is just messed up. Like it was like 53 years ago that like they stopped lynching and like made it against the law. Like that's like my grandma's still alive and she used to work on the plantation. Like, and she tells me like stories. I'm like, this is insane. Like she's so stuck in like how she grew up, she's still working till this day, and she's like, my grandma's old. She still gets up and goes to work, won't retire at all.
That reminds me too, the fact that slaves back in the day were basically America's wealth, because they said like back in 1863 slaves were worth $3 billion. And the fact that, you know, you guys, like the black community back then didn't get any of it. The white people got to keep all that money. And it's crazy because then now, like, they were able to buy houses. They were able to build their wealth off of owning land, owning houses. And it just sucks to know that, like, black people didn't really get to have the same opportunity back then to build their wealth now and basically for their future and their children's future.
Oh, yeah. That would be like a check I was talking to someone about that. Like, I think I was talking to my cousin about that actually, like last year. I was like, that check for reparations would be like, I don't know what, like it would be terrible. You see how much they gave the Jewish after like the Holocaust and stuff like that, and banned swastikas and everything. Like, black people are the only ones who haven't gotten reparations because that check would be way too damn big. Like, that would be like, I mean, that's like some money that they don't have. So, and that's why when I seen like looting and rioting and stuff like that, I was like, I know a lot of these people looting are doing it for the wrong reasons, but the other people that are like rioting, like, I mean, hey, like it's, I don't want to see it. I don't really condone it. But at the same time, if these people built this country, they might want to burn a little bit of it down out of frustration if y'all aren't hearing what they're saying. And it's like, it's the saddest thing to think about. Cause there's a chart too of it, like of all the different people that got reparations for what happened to them. And like, black people have like the longest time span and $0. And it's like, man, we got housing projects for days that just ruin communities and stuff like that. And just all these other things that were just set in place from like way back to where like they set it up so perfectly and like it's not working for them. And they still don't, like, it takes like stuff like, it takes a pandemic and stuff like this to happen for them to finally be like, oh, here, you can drink at this fountain, or here, you can come here now, or you can have housing. Like, why does it take all this? Like, you promised us freedom and equality and all this cool stuff, and then this happens, and you know what you did to us. So it's like, it's like, why is it so hard for y'all to just like admit it? Like, why is the slavery page in my school book 13 pages?
It's so true.
I remember counting that, and I was like, 13 pages? Like, my encyclopedia at home says something totally different. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's fun. It's I get really frustrated when people, when the media, so I understand that the news and stuff, like they report the rioting and the looting and make it the focus because like news sells, like drama sells, like they have to, like, well, for, they don't have to, they want to, because that's the only way that people are going to look at the story, at the news. And the thing that's like super frustrating, I was we have church online because, you know, of everything. And my pastor was interviewing a another pastor who was Black, and she was saying how, like, a lot of people in her timeline, like, who were white, they were looking for, they were looking at the news for a reason to believe that Black people were who they always heard that they were and always saw them as. And so they were looking at the looting and the rioting and stuff like that, and like immediately was like see, they are exactly who I thought they were gonna be. They're exactly the people who we heard about. They're always doing this, they're always doing that. And they were like asking these surface level questions, but it was like it never dawned on them to ask the deeper questions, like why, what made them do that? Like what made them get to this point? And if we continue as a country to ask the surface level questions, we're never going to get anywhere. And it's like, it's so infuriating sometimes because like people are seeing these thousands of people are protesting and doing all these things. But yet they only are focusing on, and I'm not like, you know, condoning the looting or anything like that. Like I don't believe that that's the way to do it or anything, but it's just like, it's frustrating where it's just like, do you only see that something is burning? Like, why would you think a human would go to those lengths to burn something down if obviously something wasn't wrong? And I mm-hmm. just like, it's just so like, it's just so frustrating to me. And then, you know, going back to, you know, the system, right. And how it was set up. So obviously the Emancipation Proclamation in that document, it, you know, it promised freed slaves a certain amount of land and a mule, right? Because they obviously knew that, like, you know, we couldn't, like, someone can't just start from nothing, right? They have to get somewhere. People were so hateful back then that literally the next president that went into office took it back. Like completely took literally, everything back. And it's just like, bro, you like, I can't even have this land. I can't even have this donkey. Like, you guys are so hateful that I can't have this. Like, what is it about me that is so infuriating to you that you would take this away from me? I'm like, it just like the whole situation in and of itself is just so mind boggling to me, where it's just like, why are we still talking about this? Like, why are we still talking about like the most basic necessities of a human being? Why is that being debated?
Right.
Like, where I throw the whole thing away. it's so frustrating. It's frustrating, but like, does he? It was perfectly set up for us. Black people to fail, like hands down. And the most infuriating thing about it was that we didn't actually fail. Like we found some way to always prevail. And then when we were getting to that point, they immediately took it away from us again. Like
the whole Black Wall Street.
Yes, exactly.
Like it gets so bad that they're like, oh man, let's assassinate this president, put this one in office, take all that back. Oh, they're over there. They have doctor. Oh, burn it down. Like every time where it's like, you even will take out your own people in order to keep this going. To right, like,
and about the Black Wall Street thing, it's like white people were going there to shop. Those were considered like the best places to shop during that time. And it was so infuriating to them that they burned it down. Mm-hmm. They literally bombed the entire thing, but nobody knows about that.
Oh yeah, that's not tough.
not one person knows about that.
Yeah, like the Black Wall Street, I recently saw a video, and for our listeners, if you haven't, I extremely, extremely hope that you do, because this girl taught me so much in, it's like 7 minutes long, than what I was taught about Black history in school. And the name of that video is How Can We Win? And it's by Kimberly Jones, and she explains Black Wall Street and why people are looting, why people are rioting, why people are protesting. And I highly recommend to watch that, because it'll teach you and explain to you why and how the system was built to Fail.
Even that name, when I first seen that, when I found that, I was like, Black Wall? I was like, what's the real name? I remember asking my cousin, I was like, what's the real name? He's like, oh, Greenwood District. I was like, why did they have to call it Black Wall Street then? Was it like a statement or something? Like, I remember just like the more facts that I found out about it, because I come from like a suburban like neighborhood and stuff like that, it just made me so frustrated. Like I said earlier, like it was like, like people that had nothing to do with it would like, I'd have an attitude with them throughout my day just because I'm like, man, I just found out this, that, and the third. And it's like, but you're at work though. Like, wait till you clock out and go like take care of that at home. It used to get me so frustrated because none of it ever like the questions that I had, I knew like, who's going to answer the question? Like, why are you guys doing this? And it's like clear that it's like a power thing, a money thing. And then it's probably an embarrassment thing too, because a lot of those stories will never be in history books. Oh, yeah.
No, history is written by the victors. Mm-hmm. So they put the pieces that sound really good, that makes them feel look really good, and like, you know, oh, you know, this period in our history with slavery and then, you know, segregation and stuff like that. And it is just like, no. It wasn't a small part of history. It was a massive part of history. Mm-hmm. And you've like literally suppressed an entire people group for years. It's not small. Like, let's like kind of, you know, really say what it is right now. Like, that's not,
yeah, that used to bother me in high school, because they had this like gang in high school called like the Confederates, and they would like come to school like with their flags and stuff hanging on their car. And I remember like roasting the hell out of them one day, because I was like, well, you guys know y'all lost. Like, y'all lost.
Oh my gosh.
Y'all literally, like, y'all lost, and y'all didn't even want to be a part of America. Like, why are this? Do y'all even know what y'all are doing right now? Because it threw me off, because one of the dudes in the gang, he was Black.
Oh, my God.
I was like, yo, bro, you know that they lost, right? Like, that's not even a W. And he would like try and talk to me about, he's like, you don't even know who you are, and blah, blah. I was like, I'm actually Seminole. They were runaway slaves and Indians, and we actually beat America. John Horace, Juan Carlos, like, you can look it up, but they won't make a move about it. But we could go on, but that flag you got on, they lost. Like, you're representing, like, is not really American.
And even to the fact of, like, people are still, like, I'm originally from the South, and, like, the Confederate flag is everywhere because it's, like, oh, it's such a rich part of our culture, the South, the pride, da, da, da. But it's just, like, dude, you guys, like, you're so insensitive. Like, you only see one part of it, where you don't see that this flag is representative of people who were literally slaves. Like, you owned people. Yeah. How do you not see that and be like extremely embarrassed? But again, that power, that money, it does, the greed, it does something to people. Like, it baffles me. And then after that, it's like a pride thing. It's just like, well, you know, it was, and they try to explain it away, and it's just like, no, you can't explain this away. It is what it is. Like, you have to see it for what it is. But until everyone gets on that same page, because as together as we have been over these past couple of weeks, and I don't want to take that away, there are still people who are still trying to explain all of this away. There are still people who are trying to justify the things that have been happening and to still hold on to that power. And it's just like, why? Why? Like, what is it about this that is so amazing to you that you want to suppress a whole group of people? I don't want the stuff. I just want to be equal to you. That's it.
Literally. And it's like, it's so simple at the end of the day too. Like hating is not tight. Like, love is way cooler. Like, it's just not, it's not tight to hate. Like, it's not even dope. Like,
you actually grow old. Hating literally ages you more.
Negative stress.
Like, it is.
We don't need that.
Like, imagine just waking up mad. Like, what? What is wrong with you?
I couldn't. Like, you wake up every day just angry. Why? Like, what?
Even when you wake up next to, like, your love, you're like, yo, I love you. Get out of my face. It's like, yo.
Like, Black people. Like, why? Did I do to you? Let's talk about it. Let's actually have a conversation. Because I want to know.
Oh, my God.
Desmond Monique brought up the fact that, like, people are still trying to fight this movement. And so I wanted to tie it in with this next question. What is your response to people who say that all lives matter and that blue lives matter?
Oh yeah, that whole like we said Black Lives Matter, but we never said like only Black Lives Matter. Like we know all lives exactly, matter, but it's yeah. like we just need your help. Like we just need your help with this real quick because they got us kind of messed up right now. They keep killing us. It's been happening for a little while. Like it's pretty messed up what they're doing. It doesn't make sense. Like all lives matter, but right now like they kind of got us bent. So we need your help with this Black Lives Matter thing real quick. And then you know everything else. We take care of everything else, but it's just been so long, you know, it's been like, this is the crazy thing that's been happening with us the last 10, 15 years is like only like a stretch of the other like 400 years and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Like, we've been trying. It's like, come on, man, you gave y'all Tupac, like all these cool people and all African-Americans like contributed so much. It's like, just help us with this real quick, like real quick. We'll get right back to everything else you love us for, know us for. We'll get right back to that. Just knock this out. And then we got a couple other things to knock out. Like, of course, all lives matter.
Like, help us out though. Like, yeah. Come on. Like, I'm hurting like, here. Like,
come on.
Like for real. Like, it's funny because like, you may have included this in your notes, Roseanne, but or maybe the question. I don't know. But like I always equate it to like, let's say right, like I come up to you, Roseanne, and I kick you in the shin, and like you scream, ah. And then someone comes up to you and being like, you know, everyone's shin hurts at one time. And it's
like, oh my God, that's so true.
If everyone's shin was hurting, my shin is hurting. Can you help me? Mm-hmm. Help me. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's so infuriating. Like I like every single time, like blue lives matter. Okay, but blue lives are not getting killed now.
That reminds me, like for example, this is another example I wanted to use. When people support breast cancer, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like someone's gonna come up to you and be like, well, all cancers matter. You know what I mean? Like there or for example, if someone's your house is in this neighborhood and all of a sudden your house is on fire, this fire truck comes over and this person's trying to put out their house that's not even on fire. It's kind of like that. You know, you got to help the house that's on fire first. You know what I mean?
First of all, that's property damage. Okay. You done put water in someone's house that don't even matter. You done water damage their whole entire house. And the one that is really on fire is still on fire. Like, where is the progress here? Help me.
Like, it should understand. Be just so simple for people. It's like, yo, this specific group of people are in danger right now, so let's help them out real quick, and then we get right back to the other issues that we have, because there's so many of them. That's why I'm like, I'm so excited for this Pride parade next week. Like, I'm waiting on my flag to get here right now.
I wonder, and this is kind of a little off topic of this specific subject, but I wonder, like, with the like suppression of the Black community, there's been within music and entertainment, there's been a lot of just like taking from it, and specifically you know this podcast and the you know what we are all interested in K-pop, there has been so much just you know blatant like, yes, we are going to take from you know the Black community, Black culture, because we think it's cool. But then when it comes time, and this is maybe the time when it's like, you know, there's been a lot of, and I know, Des, you kind of talked about on the podcast, Brizzy Talk, but when the ones who specifically took that from, you know, the Black community and took those trends and didn't say anything about it, it's almost like, huh, like, okay, now I don't know how to feel about you. Or certain members of a certain group said something, but the rest didn't. And you know they were profiting off of it, and you know that they know it's a, like, I guess the argument is that not everybody has to speak up and say something, which is true. But I think about the ones that didn't say something, and like, let's say someone who's very close to them did, and you just know that they profited off of it. Like, how does that make you feel? Like, it's, in a way, it makes me a little salty, but again, like, you can't, like, who's to say they didn't also give $1 million to Black Lives Matter, or, you know, give $1 million to another charity. Like, we don't know that, I guess.
Yeah, I think, like, so I think about this a lot, because like obviously, like, you know, the BTS thing came up, and like in on Twitter, like the first half of last week, like everybody was just like talking about it, and you know, unfortunately it was coupled with the whole "what do you think" situation, which, if you know, if for those who weren't aware, they accidentally put a sample of a Jim Jones sermon in the song on Suga's mix, or August D's mixtape, and so that like extremely divided everybody, and so it was like everyone was on pins and needles to see if they were going to if BTS was going to say something. The thing that I was asking about is that, or not asking about, but what I was thinking of is that, for me as a Black listener, and I'm just kind of coming into the whole K-pop thing, and I'm happy that I've had a friend of mine who is like super traversed in this, so she's been like kind of helping me navigate all this, and like, you know, I'm kind of getting everything together, but for me I look at things from I'm a Christian, so my moral lens is through Christ. So I don't necessarily look to a group or a thing to give me the validation. Like, I knew that I was valued and loved and cared for way before I started standing any group. And so I wasn't necessarily looking for that validation. Although, to your point, Emily, I would have been salty. I would have been waving my army bomb, mad salty. I would have been still buying my ticket with the salty left eye, and it's super like, you know. But I was happy that they did it. But I think actually, Desi, it was on your podcast, because I am a listener of the podcast. I think it was either you or Briss who said it, where it was just like, we can't always necessarily expect people groups that are kind of far away from where we are to kind of understand what is currently going on in the culture, and then also when we're talking about like the K-pop industry and stuff like that, there's contracts, there's things that are going on in the background that we have no knowledge of. And so for me to kind of protect my heart, like I don't even look to them for that validation. I don't look to them to do that, if that makes sense. Like it wouldn't have mattered whether or not they said something to me, because I knew who I was, I know what my worth is, and I don't need to find it in a particular K-pop group to validate me. But it feels good when they do. Like, I was jumping up and down and being like, yes, BTS, when they dropped that million. Oh, yeah. And, you know, they matter. And I was like, and then ARMY came back and was just like, you know what, we gonna match you. And then all of a sudden it's $2 million for a movement. It felt good. I was like, yes, I don't have to look at you with the side eye no more. Yeah. But
oh, I sent out a lot of DMs after that. A lot of people hit me up and they're like, well, when do you think they're going to say something? I was like, that's the whole thing. Like, it's not a question. Like, is BTS going to say something? Yeah. They're for sure going to say something. That's the only group that I've seen ever who made a mistake, acknowledged it, said they were going to change, showed the change, and then started like they changed their own words, their Korean words, because they didn't want to offend people. Like, it's a matter of like, for me, I was like, I bet you they probably donated more than that, but they don't want to draw too much attention to themselves. So they're like,
and they weren't even the ones to drop the story. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't even going to say that they did that. But the fact that they did, and like everyone on Twitter was like kind of showing receipts of like everything that they've done. Like, you think about the UNICEF campaign. Like, this is not like a new thing for them to do. So it like, as much like I would have been a little salty, like, again, if they didn't say anything, but I'm also kind of just like, dude, they army is speaking for them because of the things that they have passed along to us as a fandom. Like, army had already been donating to Black Lives Matter way before BTS even did anything. I think they had raised about like $50,000 or something like that through One in an Army, I think. So like they had already been doing it. Like, I mean, the whole thing with the White Lives Lives Matter hashtag, I mean, it was a collective fandom thing, but that was so dope. Like, I went through that hashtag, that White Lives Matter hashtag, and was just dying in my seat seeing all of those fan cams. It was hilarious. So again, like, I don't necessarily need for them to say it. It feels good again to have another ally, but I don't, like, I know that I'm worth it. I know that I'm valued and I'm loved. I don't need them, but it was good. That million was great. We'll take it gladly.
Oh yeah. I was literally like, because people started blowing up my DMs when that happened. Like, a couple of them, I literally had the DM and like, I told you so. Because before that, I was like sending like silly. I was just being a smart ass. Like, I would either send a long response, or I would just send like the RM Wale video or something, or I would just a screenshot of RM's UN speech where he said, like, no matter your gender and all that stuff. I was like, they already were. So I was like, it's only a matter of time. Like, you got to give them some time. Like, I'm not going to rush them, and I'm not really tripping if they don't, because they've already done so much that their fans are like going hard. So I was like, this isn't really something to get mad about, especially when we got our own stuff going on. I know a lot of people that are like focused on what we have going over here don't know anything about what's been happened with like Koreans and Japanese people, or like the rising sun flag and why it's offensive. Like, there's stuff going on out there too, but it's like, we don't talk about that because this is what the focus is right now. Like, this is about Americans and African Americans and what's going on here. So over there, like, it's nice to see people protest and everything and to see groups speak out, but like, it's getting handled.
Like, I know that Emily have like brought up other companies and or like just individual artists that haven't spoke out about it. I know literally, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but right after BTS tweeted that out,
everybody,
a little bit after, a couple of groups have tweeted out too, which was really interesting because I don't know if they were trying to wait for the green light or like, I don't know.
I think people like need, like, there's just certain like people that just kind of need like to be like, is it okay? Like, is it really okay? And when someone else do it, then it's like, you see it all the time. It's like, I don't want to say monkey see, monkey do, but like, you know, you get the sentiment. But it was interesting. So like, I think what you were like, you know, the single person like in the group, because I think it was GOT7 that Mark had donated something. Yep. And then I saw like a couple other people were donating something. I think, yeah, I just think that people are so overly sensitive right now with the climate of everything that's happening, that they just need to kind of see a model of what it looks like. And I think that's what we kind of saw with the whole BTS.
Yeah, I loved it when I got on Instagram, like, I think like a couple of days after like stuff was like going kind of crazy. And like the first group I seen post about it was like every Momoland member's Instagram account had like 1 to 3 posts about it. And I was like, what? Of all the, I did not expect this today. Like, I follow Chewy very closely on Instagram because I love her. So I was like, yo, this is so dope. Like, my favorite of all favorites is like posting about this. And then I seen groups to where like Denise from Secret Number posted it, and they just took out her whole Instagram because like, maybe it's like that thing we're just talking about, like it's the company, or it could be like, yo, you're a rookie, like we haven't even got it popping yet, and you're drawing the wrong kind of attention. Like, people, investors aren't gonna like this. Like, matter of fact, next comeback, you gotta sit this one out, like, just to make these people happy, to where it's like, I just risked my whole career, my dream, and my X amount of years of training just to speak out for what's right, and they gonna tell me like Instagram's over and you can't perform next comeback. Like, what?
Wait, is that really what happened?
Yeah, she posted about it, and then her account got disabled, and then they like deleted a bunch of pictures of her off the group's account, and then like a hashtag started, and everybody started emailing their agency.
And they just, I think they just debuted. They still are promoting right now, or they might have just finished.
Yeah, they just finished, and they were doing like really good. And I was like, I mean, I didn't see anything wrong with it, but I understand like it's a business over there. And maybe it's like, as crazy as it sounds, it's bad for business until like BTS tweets it out or something. They're like, oh yeah, this is okay. Oh yeah, they do have a whole campaign about it. Oh yeah, this is totally fine actually. And where it's like, why does it take, and they've been doing this for a year. That's what bothered me so much is like RM spoke up. He took care of it a bunch of years ago and was like, yo, I'm going to change. I'm going to educate myself. And he did just that. So you would think the biggest group in the world's leader, like doing it would make it like known across Korea. Like it's cool to speak up about this. Like things that are actually like wrong is wrong. It's very simple.
You know what's so funny? So I was watching DKDK TV, and obviously they're in Korea. So they were saying that the picture that you know that the Korean television is painting of the Black Lives Matter movement is actually like a little like pretty negative. So I think Danny was the one that was like kind of proposing like that, you know. When it comes to that, like they have to take care of like their home base first. And so if the public image of what's happening, you know, in America and around the world is negative, then it actually does, like what Desi was saying, it hurts their business to talk about something like this, because their they promote home. They take care of home. It's home based first before the world, which when you think about it, it makes sense, right? Like when you think of an artist, let's say like Beyonce will have a concert in Houston, and it's like a massive like fair event thing. Like she's taking care of like her home. That's her hometown. That's her home city or whatever. It's like, I think it's kind of like that same thing. It sucks. Because again, like the K-pop is taking a very like interesting spike, especially here in America, and that does have a lot to do with like, you know, with honestly, I don't even want to just say like BTS. It's all of the groups really, and like the fan base and just their culture of how they connect with their fans is so much different than what I've experienced, and I think that's why I got into it the way that I did, because I was just like, y'all really do care about us, like real talk. Yeah. And so it actually would benefit them a lot more if they did speak out on issues like this and connect it with their community. But again, like what Desi was saying, like BTS had already did the work, like the work that they had been doing for years, and the model that they had been showing us as ARMY, like it had like. Again, it was a no-brainer for us as a fandom to be like, okay, we're gonna get behind this. Okay, we're gonna do this. Like, you know, love Black Army or something like that was like trending, like again, way before BTS had even said anything. Yeah. So going back to the point, I think that there is still a little bit of like a hazy area when it comes to these things, like for a Korean group with their own hometown, and like again they just debuted, so like they don't even have like the footing to be able to do those things, but it still sucks. Like it's just like, again, this is a human thing. It doesn't, why does it have to be because it's specifically Black Lives Matter that she had to be excluded like that? That's like so messed up.
Yeah, that really weirded me out, because I was like, that's weird. Like, this is, your group makes black music, it's just in Korean. Like, you can't just say you can't just say something about it. On top of that, it's like the things that, like, I think Seo Taj and Boys was like people will say that was one of the first K-pop groups, and they were literally like talking about stuff that needed to be talked about. Yeah, like literally, right. That's why I'm like, that's so weird. But I'm so glad we're in a time to where like think like right now today, like everything people were uncomfortable talking about is what we need to talk about. Like, don't talk about politics, that's touchy. Don't talk about sexuality, that's touchy. Don't talk about this, where it's like, okay, but now we have to, because we got this crazy dude in the White House, and we have a bunch of like wild stuff going on all over the world, and people are hating and killing people for like the way that they are, the way that they look. And it's like, it's insane. But now we get to talk about it.
Honestly, like I get the business perspective part of it, but also Because I did get messages from people who don't live in the US asking me right away, instead of like the protests, they would first bring up the riots. That's all they care about. It's like, oh, are you safe? Like, I saw there was riots, but they don't really know why and how it became this way. And I feel like if the companies were to say something about it, I would hope that they would educate their Korean fan base about what's really going on. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they could use their platform as a way to speak up about, you know, like you said, especially if they are, you know, using your guys' culture, they might as well try to educate Korea about what's actually really going on. And I mean, I'm really happy that BTS took that step, and I'm not surprised at all, because I know what they stand for. And I hope, I mean, I just hope that Korea will see or understand more. I mean, like I said, I watched a video where they were interviewing those people, interviewing people in Korea, and they say that literally that is what the media is showing, but it seemed like those people actually did research and looked things up on their own. And I hope more people will do that as well around the world.
That was the Asian Boss video, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you watched?
Oh, yes. Yes. I think so, actually. That's what I watched. Yeah.
That was a good one.
Now, since we're on the topic of BTS, we all are BTS ARMY fans here. So once the news of BTS donating came out and the actual amount came out, which, by the way, was not going to be revealed by BTS, but because Variety wanted a clarification or confirmation.
Wait, what happened?
To say about Variety, because they released an article.
They were going to announce.
BTS donated. They tweeted out their support, obviously, for Black Lives Matter. And then there was a statement saying that they've been donating and they're going to keep donating, you know? And then once the whole once the article came out, and it was a Variety article stating the amount, which was $1 million, it stated on there that they weren't going to reveal how much, but Variety was the one that wanted confirmation, and so that's how we learned of the actual amount. But they also wrote this article that about the Dear Class of 2020 speech that they had in performance, which I don't want y'all to read because that's going to give them clicks, and that's a whole other conversation because they were so petty. Like, I don't even know what Variety is doing, but anyway.
Wait, what?
Yeah, girl. Like, just you probably could just search for it on Twitter and you can see what people are saying. Yeah, a screenshot of the article, and it's just a mess. And it's like, really? Y'all wanted confirmation of how much they donated, and now you're going to be petty and write this article about their commencement speech and performance
for the class of 20?
Basically just saying, like, they weren't social distancing, like, critiquing them, and it's like, really, y'all?
I don't like people sometimes, because, like, why?
There's nothing else to say about them but that. Like, this is like,
exactly. Like, there was no point. And then after being criticized, they, like, put in quotation marks, like, although they do live together. And it's like, really? Like, okay. Anyway, what I'm trying to get to is, once we found out, and obviously ARMYs matched the donation, and in less than 24 hours, we were able to garner even more than $1 million for Black Lives Matter. Did you think we'd hit $1 million that soon?
Oh, yeah. I've seen the power of ARMY before. As soon as I seen that, I was like, they about to get like $3 million in like a day. Like, this is about to be crazy. Because people were like, hit up. I think they tagged a bunch of YouTube reactors. And I was like, I mean, that's a no-brainer. I'm going to donate right now.
Yeah, I got tagged. And I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I've been donating.
That's what I said. I was like... I was like, I mean, but this is good. I gotta do this.
I'll still do it. Yeah.
Jose was like, oh, all right.
Literally, because I seen like everybody else donating, and I was like, I mean, this makes sense. Like, I mean, I could donate some more money. And I was like, okay, I'll just send the screenshot, because they started DMing me, and like, it got like kind of extra. I was like, oh, snap. Like, y'all want to make sure, like, you YouTubers better pull up. So I was like, okay, I'll post. They made sure I posted on my community page and everything. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I figured they would raise it in like 24 hours, because it's like, this is like a it's like a record setting thing. Like, you know, when like the boys come back, they're like, yo, this is the plan. They get super organized, and like whatever they have planned gets done when they said it'll get done. So 24 hours, I was like, man, watch them raise like $3 million in like 12 hours or something. Like, I would not be surprised. Like,
well, big shout out to One in an Army, which is the one who actually, they were the ones who were keeping track of that and started the hashtag Match a Million. Yes. And we were able to do it, which, by the way, we did have a member of that organization here on our podcast as well in an interview. So they are legit, guys. If you still want to donate, they are legit. It's not shady situations going on.
You know, I was not surprised at all, just because, like, again, like, I've only been in the fandom since like late November, but like from what I've seen of them, like the whole James Corden thing, I was just like, wait, how much did we raise and how long? Hold on, what now? Like, I'm like, most churches don't even get organized in like 3 months. We organize how much money in 24 hours? Like.
And Armandika, we always make jokes about like, oh my god, we're so broke, oh, we have nothing in our wallet. But as soon as it comes to charity, we're down.
The minute BTS says something, they're like, oh, $500 easy. I'm like, wait, I am confused.
It happens so fast.
I was trying to stay off of social media. I take it a couple of days off just to kind of like recuperate and get my life together. But I was sort of periodically watching it. So like I saw when the hashtag first kind of like went trending. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, like everyone's like they're like, oh my god, we're at $800,000. I was like, wait, hold on, this was like 2 hours ago. I am how did you do this? And then like they just kept doing it, and then like when the news hit, I just saw all these people just being like, yo, K-pop fans did save the day, like in the history books. when people are talking about this in the history books years from now, K-pop stans are going to be the heroes of this movement.
They can't be telling.
Yo, even Jordan Peele tweeted out like with a heart to K-pop stans, because
Match a Million?
White Lives Matter, right? No, that they were like flooding with fan cams, the hashtag White Lives Matter.
I was watching it, that hashtag all day, and I was like in tears laughing so hard. I was like, y'all thought. and the K-pop stans were like, not on our watch.
Right.
Hilarious. Yeah, I was so excited to see that. I was like, I better not hear another word about a fan cam after this. Because I didn't see anybody. That's the only fan cams that I've seen, because I've never had a problem with that. Like, I know they're under like every tweet, but it's like, I like watching fan cams. So like, I get excited, especially if it's like a super negative tweet or like something that's like ugly or something. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, nope, Chung got fan cam. I wasn't expecting it. Like, nice. You scroll down, you expect to see like some nonsense or people arguing, and you just see like a cool fan cam of like Jimin dancing. Like, that makes my day half the time.
Right. And then I better not be hearing that, you know, armies are a bunch of little 13-year-olds. Because come on, a bunch of 13-year-olds cannot just gather $1 million unless they took their parents' credit card and just used it without just kidding.
That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the weirdest thing I get, too, is like, oh my God, you're a BTS fan. It's like, yeah, it says Jimin on the back of this sweater. Like, there is a lot of us. There's a lot of us my age.
There's a lot of us. There's a lot of us blacks. Like, yes,
No, so for those who are listening and want to help, what are ways that they could help with this whole movement?
Just search. You could click the hashtag on Twitter right now, or Google it, or websites. One of my favorites is like, I follow the Color of Change Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I learn a lot from just like surfing their page and stuff like that. Or, you know, go to those pages and hit that little drop down and like follow some people. Like, there's some, like, I'm pretty sure as soon as you hit that, you'll see like the Black Lives Matter, or like the Showing Up for Showing Up for Racial Justice is another good page. And just people like that.
Definitely continuing to educate yourself even after all of this is done. And don't stop checking up on your Black friends, or any marginalized group of people. Like again, I think that this it should not be just a moment and like just, you know, something to do while we're in quarantine type of thing. I truly believe that we have shown the power of coming together really does look like in invoking change. And we've seen that, like, you know, Congress has already started, you know, putting up these proposals for police reform, and even in New York, they passed the Eric Garner law, which criminalizes using chokeholds. So like your mm-hmm. the pressures that we're mm-hmm. doing in continuing to speak out and speak up and speaking up for your people is really, really important, and it really does matter, and we need everybody. It's not just gonna be, you know, a thing that the Black community has to hold up. Like we hold each other up in crises like mm-hmm. this. So we mm-hmm. like, you know, just continue to do what you need to do, and don't, like, you know, just don't let this go by the wayside, and yeah like that.
I would say another thing is, and this is just not just for Black businesses, but if you want to continue to, you know, focus on that, you know, supporting Black businesses as well. There's a Forbes article that came out about 4 days ago, and it just lists out 75 black owned businesses to support, from you know financial businesses to hair to wine to, you know, pediatrics, like across the board. It just lists out different types of Black businesses that exist, and there are many more. Environment, media, like all those things. I feel like that's a, you know, another way to help, because yeah, I mean, you know, supporting the, you know, maybe one day there can be another, like, you know, something similar to what the, you know, Black Wall Street was. And I think that, you know, aside from empathy running, you know, being a huge part of this world, money is also the same. Everyone has to eat, and everyone wants to fulfill their passions. So being able to also minimize that wealth gap that Roseanne was talking about, supporting Black businesses, I think will definitely help that. So I'd highly recommend going to go check out that Forbes article that lists out just 75. There are many, many more, but I think that's a big way to help overall as well. But also, you know, helping out other communities, businesses at the same time. I think for everyone listening that hopefully, you know, if you weren't aware and now you are aware, thank you for listening. And I hope that, you know, you can take everybody's, you know, opinions and thoughts and suggestions today and use it in your own life. But I guess most of all, thank you for, you know, at least listening and hopefully getting some new perspective.
For those who are listening and are very interested on finding you guys on social media, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm at Dezzy March, DezzyMarch on like every platform.
That's easy. Wow. That's so cool. I had to do different ones for each platform. You're
right, that's awesome. I got luck. Shout out to my uncle for nice. Those two Z's in my name.
Right? Oh my gosh. Oh, and what's your guys' podcast?
Oh, Brizzy Talk, BRIZZY Talk.
What about you?
Yeah.
Yep. Nice.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, and in Twitter is _ justmo, JUSTMO with 3 underscores in the back.
You can find me at EMIHAYDEL, and like Roseanne, Jose, and Desi, there is another podcast also on the Himalaya app. Called In My Feels that I co-host along with Dre. So okay. Check that out. I just want to also thank you guys for, you know, coming together for this conversation. I certainly learned more things, and thank you, Jose and Roseanne, for, you know, giving you know, Black voices the space, you know, to, you know, talk about these things. And thank you, Desi and Monique, for you know, sharing your views and feelings as well.
Thank you for having us.
No, seriously, thank you. Yes. I mean, yes. I'm the only like person that no one knows around here. So thank you for making me feel feel like super welcomed and a part. And you know, I support all of you guys like financially, because I think that's like super important, and I'll continue to do so. And again, thank you for giving us Black people a voice, like especially during this time, because you know this is the first in many that we haven't, and it's really important. Like conversations like these is really important. So thank you so much for wanting to do this.
Thank you. Oh my God, thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you.
So that was our episode for today. Make sure to stay tuned for next week's episode, because for next week, we'll be updating you on all that is BTS and our very special guest interview.
So to stay updated, follow us on Twitter at InterludeArmyPD. That is InterludeArmyPD. And we also have our email address, which is interlude.army.podcast@gmail.com. That is interlude.army.podcast@gmail.com. Thank you once again for tuning in for such an important episode, everyone. Have an amazing week. Stay safe. Stay home. Stay healthy.
Stay safe, you guys. Thank you again, and hope to catch you next week. Bye.
Yes. Bye, Roseanne. Bye, everyone. Bye, Army.
Bye, Jose. Bye, Army.